you. The recording has been started and all lines are open. Please go ahead.
Thank you. Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. Welcome to the Logging of the Domain Name Working Group call on Thursday, 16th of May. On the call today, we have Hago Dafala, Christian Durain, Lisa Gaono, Alan Greenberg, Volker Grayman, Matt Schneller, Hazel Shaw, and Kai Gray. Apologies from David Maher and Michaela Nealon. And from staff, we have Marika Conan and myself, Shia Shavalin. May I remind all participants to please state their names before speaking for transcription purposes. Thank you very much, and over to you.
Thank you very much. As noted, Michaela is not with us today, and I'll be chairing. I still have a bit of a cough, so if I start hacking halfway through, please forgive me. And first, is there any changes in statements of interest? Seeing no hands, hearing no one screaming out, we'll assume not, and we'll continue on with the agenda of continuing with the review of the public comment tool. Marika, you raised two questions when you sent out the agenda. Do you want to review those now, in your mind, is there enough comment that we want to go back over them and try to put them to bed at this point?
This is Marika. The only feedback we received was from Gabriella, which she sent earlier today. I don't know if people had a chance to review that, and I don't think she's on the call yet. I think the first, her comment on the first one is quite straightforward. I think it just says that maybe we want to put some additional explanation in our response that, you know, renewal is currently possible under the UDFP rules, and that's not something we're looking to change. I think for the second one, I think that's actually something that's anyway on our agenda for today to look further into, but it may make sense for Gabriella when she joins to explain herself her thinking. I think in short, I think she agrees or would support an extension of the response time, but I think she also asked the same question that I think we also raised at the last call, that it would be good to have a better understanding probably from the feedback received from UDRP providers how much time there actually or typically is between the initial filing by the complainant and the moment that the commencement or official 20-day clock starts ticking.
Right. Do we have any, is Christine or Ty have any input on that? I don't know whether we gave them advance warning. Christine, you have your hand up.
Yeah, this is Christine Durain from NAF. And I think I've mentioned this previously, but there's the official window, which is the complaint gets filed. We have 3 days in which to do a deficiency check. The complainant has 5 days in which to amend their complaint. And then assuming that gets done, then the complaint gets commenced. So it should be commenced in no more than 8 days. If somebody drops the ball in the meantime, or, you know, the complainant basically drops the ball in the meantime, then the complaint gets dismissed out from underneath them. Now, the biggest question mark is what we're talking about here today, is the fact that we can't start the commencement or the deficiency check until we have the lock from the registrar. So in many cases, we can receive a case and commence it that day or the next day if we have a registrar that's responding in the same day or the next day. Like, you know, when we have cases with GoDaddy, we can often commence them the same day if there's no other errors in them. So the problem is when we have registrars wait and sit on it for, you know, 2 days, 5 days, 2 weeks, a month, that's what delays the process. And, you know, it's sort of the flip side of Phil Corwin's, the problem he mentioned. And I think it's realistic. I don't disagree with what Gabriella said as far as how the, the respondents have sort of come to view those extra days as being sort of a de facto additional response period. And I don't think there's fundamentally any problem with that. But I often wonder if certain registrars don't delay responding for that week, 2 weeks, specifically for that purpose, to give the respondents extra time. I don't know. I mean, it's just sort of been a suspicion that I've had over the years. There's absolutely nothing to base that on. And I'm not saying that we need to, you know, protect against that in any way. It's just that, you know, that is the one place that slows it down. Otherwise, the UDRP defines the number of days that you have between the filing and commencement. So really the only party dragging their feet in the process is the registrar.
Okay, thank you, Christine. Ty?
Yes, hello, this is Ty. So a lot of what Christine mentioned there, of course, is very valuable with regards to how the process runs. Of course, most cases we see here, you know, we get them and we send an email to the registrar. Things move along rather smoothly. I just want to maybe take the time now to just emphasize as a procedure, you know, we note that most cases, of course, don't see a response, you know, around 75% or so. And in the cases, for instance, under CCTLD, there are many that don't have a provision for a notice to the respondent. But in this regard, I wanted to point out that currently under the rules, paragraph 5D does have a provision already which notes that at the request of the respondent, the provider may, in exceptional cases, extend the period of time for filing of a response. And we do see occasionally requests that do come in, but it's noted that, you know, irrespective of how much time a respondent may have had, you know, prior to the formal time period that's provided, the formal 20 days, you know, typically we don't see many responses. It doesn't seem to be something that we see a lot of where parties are being, you know, utilizing this extra period of time. Of course, we don't necessarily see all of that, I would say, to be fair, but there do exist some mechanisms, I think, already built into the process that kind of take this into account. And as Christine noted, that usually these time periods are rather fixed, and they usually do proceed rather smoothly.
Okay, I have a question. How many of the responses tend to come in towards the end of the 20-day period? Either to Ty or Christine.
This is Ty again. Of course, typically we do see them coming in near the end of the deadline period. We do actually get some. It is common to get communications throughout the process, especially where a party might not be as knowledgeable in that. We do see a lot of communications, but typically that is the case, just speaking off the top of my head, that they would utilize most of the time. I wouldn't say all of the time.
Okay, so we, of course, can't tell whether that is effectively delaying till the period is almost over or they actually need the time. So I'll tell you my inclination to this, taking off chair hat for the moment, and the alternative we seem to be looking at is either one of three, either sticking with what we have right now, and I think respondents have a strong and valid objection, as has been noted by a number of people, backing out on the change altogether and allowing the complainant or requiring the complainant to still notify the respondent, or extending it by some number of days and putting putting that in the preliminary draft and seeing what the answers that come back. And my inclination is, if we're going to end up giving up on the substantive change that we've discussed a lot, I think we should be doing that based on input, not just unilaterally walking away from it right now. So in my mind, it comes down to coming up with a reasonable number of days, which may map to a typical number of days that we see between the original message from the respondent, from the complainant, and the UDRP formally commencing. And I'm guessing that's something like 5 or 6 days on the average. So I guess I'd like comment, you know, does that sound like a reasonable way forward at this point? And if so, how do we come up with that typical number of days? Is your hand still up, or is that?
I can provide just a general reaction. Of course, I would welcome other people's comments on this, just to get some proportion understanding. But on thinking about this particular topic, and reflecting upon the fact that there's already something that's built into the rules as it stands, and then also reflecting on what we see a lot of our realities are, meaning that, you know, there's a lot of response defaults out there altogether, that, you know, if it's considered necessary by this group that some sort of allocation of time be given to the respondent, that it should be, of course, in light of the what's happened before, proportional to what has gone on, meaning that if there was a brief period of window that was available, you know, that such would be proportional to any sort of extension, and in light of the mechanism that's already provided for under the rules, and in light of the vast number of defaults, something that may be something that would be requested by a respondent if it's necessary. Now, this is taking that if we were to go down this particular path, and I think that there have been other comments that have made where it's been reflected on the fact that, you know, there is a formal period for response. What we're proposing doesn't necessarily change the formal time period for response, but in light of other comments that we receive, if we feel it's necessary to go down that path, that the concept of proportionality to what's gone on in the proceeding, and in light of the response defaults, we do see the fact that it should be requested, perhaps, as another point that should be taken on. That's just sort of my reaction, of course, to this situation.
Christine?
Hi, yeah, I wanted to just ask Ty a quick question. This is Christine from National Arbitration Forum, for the record. I'm wondering, because, you know, you mentioned that, and I know I mentioned in the chat that we both have extension periods. I'm not quite sure how WIPO's works, but ours is you get 20 days at forum's discretion, and you pay a $100 fee for the extension. That's what the respondents can get. So are you proposing that, or are you, I know you're not proposing, I know you're not even necessarily saying you agree or disagree with this, but is your hypothesis that then perhaps we offer a 5-day or whatever day the group decides sort of free extension to anybody who asks, and then we add the 20-day extension, that paid extension on top of it, or sort of what was your sort of visualization of that?
Well, I guess, you know, I don't want to propose anything right here, but my first reaction is that, you know, the first thing that comes to my mind is that, well, there is a response period. That response period remains unchanged with our proposal, first off. Second, you know, there is an understanding that under the UDRP system, there are, you know, a period of days between when a respondent would receive notice pursuant to the rules at the outset of a case when it's filed, and then when we formally commence, and that period of time varies. So there's some where it's, if you mentioned GoDaddy would return back the same day and you kick it off on the same day, then you know that would be different than if you had mentioned you know, period of months delay, although that would be unusual, and also given what we had already proposed, you know, a rather unacceptable, I would say, length of time for a response from a registrar. You know, that's my first, my second reaction there. And then when we go on there, just noting the fact that it is rather rare that we do see requests that would be in line with this under paragraph 5 of the rules. And I would just say off the top of my head, when I do see that, it would be something like a religious holiday or something comes up, and the people were out of office and they were able to document that as a language of, say, exceptional circumstances. All this just being offered up for the group, if they consider it necessary to go down this path, to utilize these tools. I know, and listening into the different conversations we've all had here, that we like to minimize our impact on the UDRP process, meaning the kinds of changes that we would recommend. But that all being said, you know, I imagine we want to, at the outset, reduce our impact, but if we need to consider these things, that these concepts be brought forward. So I haven't had time to reflect. I know our processes, and when we see these sort of exceptional extensions of time, at the WIPO Center, we normally would take that into account or also ask the complainant for its comments when relevant, and then proceed to issue some sort of extension. So I'm just instead of giving a proposal, it seems like I'm just saying these are the mechanisms, the tools I see that are perhaps useful to address this. If there is indeed a feel that we need to do this, you know, and mentioning the what Alan had said there about the three options that are available, I for myself, I'm not willing to say, well, we should, you know, just give up the work that we've done and just move forward, or we make certain recommendations, or if we do make recommendations, if certain options are again then put on the table for whatever next step is to be considered in this process. That's sort of what I have in mind, just a kind of a mess of ideas right there.
Thanks, Ty. That's exactly what that was exactly my question, and I do understand that you weren't making any proposals. Thanks.
I on the other hand, will make a proposal. And again, I'm taking off my chair hat in my normal mode. I would consider it unacceptable to say that to get what a respondent typically gets now, for those who are responding, of course, they have to file for an extension and perhaps even pay a fee. And I don't think I'd make the situation as complex as adding a short free extension and then a paid extension. I think that just confuses the issue. So I would propose that we change the 20 to, let us say, 24. One could argue if it should be 25 or whatever. But as reflecting the typical amount of time that the respondent gets, and go forward with something like that. Does that sound acceptable to the both the you know, to both registrars and the providers as a way forward?
Well, Alan, this is Christine Durain. I don't know that the 24 is real. I mean, I don't know if the providers so much care. I mean, sure, Ty can weigh in on what WIPO thinks. I mean, we're just here administering the policy. But I will tell you that I don't think that the brand owners are going to like it because they want a fast process. You're adding 4 days to the process, which is supposed to be pretty fast. I mean, most cases of ours get taken down in 45 days. Many times they get taken down in 30 days. So you're adding 4 days to the process. And for what? For the handful of respondents that actually are going to be affected by this? Because you have to talk about the universe of respondents who are going to respond and were the victim of some sort of delay by their registrar of choice. So I'm not opposing the idea, you know, on my personal behalf. I'm just saying I think you're going to get a lot of feedback from the brand owner community.
Indeed, and that is where the objection is going to come from. And essentially what we're saying is we're trading those 4 days to significantly reduce, we hope, cyber flight. And the question is that a reasonable trade-off or not?
I think we can sell it.
I'm proposing it as a disinterested party because I don't play in this field at all. And that is really the trade-off that we're talking about, as opposed to backing out, leaving in the original notification, and we're essentially where we are today. Volker.
Yes, I also think that we can sell it. First of all, the UDAP is not a takedown mechanism. That would be the URS that has been created now. The UDAP is a mechanism to take ownership of a domain name. And in that case, yes, I do propose that we should be protecting the registrant that wants to defend his domain name because he believes that he has not violated any third-party rights by his registration. Even if it's only 10% or 5% of all cases, that's a significant number. And for the registrant that is faced with this situation, that is significant.
Thank you, Volker. Anyone else? Marika.
Yeah, this is Marika. I'm also wondering that, you know, with the new requirement we have that the registrar needs to lock the domain and respond within 2 business days, whether that already, you know, will reduce the time as well that currently is being used, so that indeed that the 4 days will balance out, you know, those two different elements and basically land us back at the same time frame that currently is available to registrants to respond to cases that are filed against them.
That's a good point, Marika. As Christine says, sometimes they see a month, and that's obviously an extreme case. Ty.
Sure. I just, again, just want to echo a bit of what I was saying before about the response we have with regards to requests and the exceptional circumstances. Again, there already does appear to be something that we can utilize if this is something that is seen as a necessary action. And in pulling, I guess, a number, just a hard number, may not be appropriate in all circumstances, and also in the large number of cases would serve to merely just extend the process, which would have not just saw a response default in any event. So I think that we can if we want to do this, and knowing that there would be, I would say, it's probably a very good point that there would be pushback from certain groups in light of this proposal, that we can utilize stuff and be a bit more proportional at WIPO Center. Of course, an email that's been sent in from a party that just say, hey, I need an additional period of days because of this particular reason or that is treated as a request in that manner. So it's not necessarily, I would say, something that would be a complex or exceptional burdensome thing on a respondent who's already in the process of writing his own response, his or her response to the complaint. So in this light, I think that if we want to be like coming up with these sorts of proposals, it can be useful to maintain this vision of proportionality and utilizing the tools that we already have at our disposal.
Yeah. Thank you, Ty. I think the counterbalance of that is those of us who feel we shouldn't use the extension process to make up for what is a action that we're essentially taking to possibly shorten the period of time. I feel that would be inappropriate. Certainly it's an option they have, but not necessarily. Do we have any comments from IPC members on the group? We have Lisa and Matt. Or Lisa's on the call in any case.
Hey, this is Matt. I'm on the bus at the moment, but I'll be off in just a second. So, yes, but I'll defer it until you don't have to listen to the bus noise.
Okay.
This is Lisa.
Yes.
I think if we add additional time in, we're opening the door to a wholesale revision of the UDRP, and we're going to end up with a lot of activity and a lot of action, and we're not going to accomplish anything.
I'm not sure what you mean by opening up the door. At this point, this is the only PDP in town, and the wholesale revision is coming in sometime in the future.
Right, but what we have been doing so far has been taking the UDRP as it exists and taking terms that appear to be ambiguous and defining them. Now we're actually changing something.
Well, just for clarity, we had made the change, the suggested change of not notifying the respondent, and we discussed that a very long time ago. So I think what you're saying is you would prefer to leave the concept of the possibility of cyber flight, let the respondent be notified and not change the delay, even though we're reducing the delay somewhat by setting a time limit on the registrar lock requirement.
Well, it's not really what I see happening is that if you propose this, I think a lot of other things are going to be proposed in the comments. Well, if we're doing this, we should do this and we should do that. And in the end, we're not going to get anything that we want.
Okay, I will point out it's not you, it's we.
I understand. This is not a substantive comment in terms of I want it or I don't want it. This is sort of a this is what I see as a process thing.
Okay. I guess I see this as the time delay we're talking about is a direct extension of the of the requirement that we already looked at to not notify the respondent that the lock is going to be happening. So it's very directly linked to the lock. So certainly other people may ask for other things, but they would, in my mind, be likely to be out of scope.
Well, where I see this will start is why 4 days?
Okay.
You know, and then there will be a big discussion, sort of not within our group, but within the comments, and should it be longer than 4 days? And so I guess I come out with tie is the mechanism for this already exists. The gentler we are in terms of the changes that we make, the more likely we are to get something through.
And I think what we've seen, however, from the comments we already have on the board, which in theory we're responding to today, is that if we don't do something to counterbalance the the no warning of the extent of the respondent, we're going to be hard-pressed to continue with that change.
Okay.
All right. I think we've probably talked this through as much as we're going to with the people on the call today, unless someone else has something to say. I think between Marika and I, we're going to try to summarize what our options are and go forward on this. Does that sound reasonable? No hands, no comments. Okay, then, Marika, let's try to do that in the next day or so. And if you could point us to where in the comment response we are so we can continue. I think that was the next item that we had to, just to go back to our regular business. Is that correct, Marika?
Yes, that's correct. This is Marika. I think we left it off at comment 8, but it basically, I think, deals with the same issues and it is in line with the comment filed by ICA to note that there should be more time for respondents if time is taken away from them now, even if it's informal
okay.
time.
I think that one goes into the same bucket as the other one then. Okay, what do we have next then? We have number 9. Excuse me, Marika, could you take over for a couple minutes while
yes.
I try to get this cough up?
Yes. So this is Marika. We're now moving into the comments that were received on preliminary recommendation 3A. So basically that goes into the process that will follow following the receipt of the complaint. And the first comment is from FICPI, and they say, it is important that the UDRP provider promptly makes the initial formal request for registrar verification and that the locking of a disputed domain name is done at least at the same time. FICPI therefore supports recommendation number 3A. Anyone to add anything to this comment, or should we just respond? Notice?
Noted, thank you. Whatever.
Moving on then to the next one, Rick again, comment number 10 from the ICA. They say, we would propose solely in the context of the disclosure of compelling cyberflight justification data that the word may do so be changed to shall do so immediately, and that this additional language be added at the end of this recommendation that reads, and shall also transmit the full text of the UDRP complaint to the registrant, such complaint to be provided to the registrar by the UDRP provider at the time it sends the verification request. This modification would address any documented cyberflight problem of a substantial nature while minimizing the reduction in the registrant's effective time period in which to secure competent counsel and prepare a response. We propose that the adoption of this approach be accompanied by an increase of the standard UDRP response time by 4 days from 20 to 24 to offset the reduction and render a neutral result. This goes back to our previous discussion party.
We'll put that one on hold as well.
Hey, Alan, this is Christine Doreen from NAF. Can I
sure.
make a comment?
Yes, please.
I agree that we're sort of putting on hold this part about extending the UDRP response period, et cetera, and I'm not going to rehash that. But I just wanted to address the first part, which is changing the notification from may do so to shall do so immediately. And that, because I believe that they're, what they're talking about is, because I don't know if I have the, I scroll up, maybe it says that. I think it's, we're talking about the registrar may notify the respondent after the lock has been placed. And I think we did talk about this, but we didn't want to make the requirement upon the registrars, because that puts an extra burden on all of the registrars to be responsible to send those complaints to their customers. And so did, I don't know if we want to discuss that at all, but there were actually, I think there's actually two recommendations here, and I understand we're tabling the second one, but
yeah.
Do we want to talk about the first one?
No, thank you for calling our attention to that. Yeah, I think you're correct, and I think we very explicitly said that this is a registrar option, but it's not something that we feel we want to add to their mandatory list. I'm pretty sure that McKaylee and I suspect Volker both came out strongly on that. Rico, go ahead.
Yeah, this is Rick. I do have a question, though, on how onerous such a notification would be. I mean, I don't know registrar system well enough to judge that, but would it be, you know, following, you know, assuming that these recommendations would be adopted and entering into force, would registrars in their system, you know, have a kind of switch that when such a request comes in, that they flip the switch and saying, you know, this is a UDRP lock that is applied, which could, you know, could potentially be attached to an automatic notification to a registrant if you know, if that switch is pulled, or how would that work, or indeed how onerous would such a requirement be on registrars, you know, if these recommendations would come into force and there would be a requirement to, you know, to lock within a certain period of time, and you know, the lock would, you know, prevent certain set changes. I'm just curious to hear a bit more about that from registrars on the call.
I'd like to hear that too. I suspect the answer is that for the large registrars, it's not onerous, and for the small ones, adding a new requirement is a gotcha that might put them in an awkward position. We have Christine and then Volker.
Yes, I would say that I agree with you completely, Alan. I think some of the registrars are already doing it as part of their process. I think that theoretically, it's not complicated for a registrar to simply forward a document to their client. However, I think the last words that I heard you say, Alan, are important. The smaller registrars are going to view it as a gotcha. If we somehow make this a requirement, it is now a way that another way that a registrar is going to be in violation of the UDRP for something new and a different task that they're being asked to do, that's really not their responsibility. The UDRP is clear that it's the provider's job to serve. And so to the extent that that courtesy copy that the complainant sends is now being deflected as a burden to the registrar, who's not even a party to the proceedings, I think is going to be a little bit onerous on them. And I think that it's going to be another way for people to come back to a registrar and say, hey, you're not doing your job, you're violating the UDRP, I can't should investigate you. So I think it's going to be really hard. You also are going to be, it's also going to be something that the smaller registrars are going to have a harder time understanding. Remember, we're writing this document for those registrars that already don't know what to do. So we're adding yet another thing that they're going to have to be able to do into the process. Also, I think my final comment on this is that in the event the registrant is a quote-unquote privacy service that maybe is done through a reseller's privacy service, to what extent would the registrar be on the hook for then not forwarding the complaint to the quote-unquote right person? So that's just one thing I want to leave you with.
Thank you, Christine. Volker?
Well, yes, and adding such a requirement into the UDRP, which is, as a matter of fact, part of the registration agreement, that would also open the door for liability of the registrar if the respondent claims not to have received that notice. And we would be entering a new obligation of the registrar, and that could be, from the one side, as Christine said, been interpreted as something where people would complain about the registrar, but also the respondent would also have a door to knock on the registrar's door to claim liability if he loses the domain name because of something the registrar did or did not do.
I tend to agree on that, and I think we're taking something that many registrars will view as a customer service, that is to give the registrant a heads up that a UDRP is pending and transform it into an obligation, and I think that's outside of our domain or outside of what we should be doing. Christine, is that a new hand?
Sorry, it's a vestigial hand.
Okay. Looked like a perfectly good hand to me. All right, I think we have our answer to the first part, and thank you for Christine for pointing out there were two parts. That the first part is one we have considered and rejected because we don't believe it. We should be adding obligations onto the registrar. And the second part we'll defer until we come back to the subject. And we're on to question number 11, which is to do with 3B. Let's see if I can read this without coughing. 3B, within three business days at the latest following receipt of the verification request from the UDRP provider, the registrar will modify the status of the registration to prevent any change of registrar and registrant. These changes must be prevented within 2 business days from the date of receipt of request of the verification through the remaining pendency of the UDRP proceeding, except in the case of suspension of the UDRP proceeding, see Recommendation 10. And Marika, I think I've talked about as much as I can before giving up. If you could take over number 11.
Yeah, this is Marika, because I think it's a pretty long comment as well. And just to note, the recommendation itself is actually a lot larger. I just put the first thing in there to remind us what is in there, but I didn't want to take up the whole document with the full recommendation. And so the first comment is
my
from...
My cough, thanks you.
...from FICPI. So as regards to business days, although FICPI appreciates that the current reference to calendar days may well mean that a specific time limit ends on a holiday, the term business day is also not perfectly clear, depending on what is considered as a business day in the jurisdiction of each case. FICPI notes that the working group suggests that business days are defined as business days in the jurisdiction of the entity required to undertake the action. Although this may be acceptable, it also requires this entity to inform clearly of the yearly business days agenda in its rules related to the dispute resolution procedure. The availability of accurate identity and contact information of domain name holders is essential for effective intellectual property rights enforcement. FICPI has urged and continues to urge ICANN, registrars, and others tasked with the registration of the domain names to provide up-to-date and accurate identity with information to those having a legitimate need to obtain such information, especially those pursuing infringement of intellectual property rights. Further, who is record modifications after filing but before commencement of actions lead to unnecessary deficiencies and amendments in the context of the UDRP process. This is most often seen when third-party privacy proxies details are contained in the WHOIS. FICPI notes that in those instances, the current rules are unclear as to who is the correct respondent and what is the proper jurisdiction for such cases. Presently, requisite amendments of UDRP complaints based on incorrect WHOIS information cause delays and unnecessary extra costs for the complainant. It is therefore important that the registrant information not be changed or modified once the domain name is locked. FICPI welcomes the suggested clarification that the provider is under no obligation to require the complainant to amend its complaint should a further privacy proxy customer information be released after the lock is applied.
Thank you, Marika. I may have missed something, but I think other than re-echoing our arguments, they lead off with the issue of business days versus calendar days, and I think our answer is we have debated it and the working group believes this is the best way to go forward. And on the rest of it, I think they're just saying accurate WHOIS information is good, and that's something out of our scope, and supporting what we're doing. Have I missed anything salient? Marika.
Yeah, this is Marika. I'm just running because one of the things they noticed that it would be helpful that people would point out what the actual business days are. So I'm wondering if we can just add to that recommendations, possibly something like, involved parties are encouraged to communicate or post on their website the applicable business days for their operations, just as a note of encouragement that I can imagine that would be helpful if you're filing against a certain party that you want to know what business days are typical for, that country or that business.
I have no problem with that. Any comments from providers or registrars who are affected by this? Everyone seems to like it. Any other comments on this, on number 11, before we proceed? Marika, is that a new hand?
No, sorry, I was writing and didn't have time yet to.
Okay. All right. We are now on to recommendation 4. The registrar must confirm to the UDRP provider within 2 business days following receipt of the verification request from the UDRP provider that any changes of registrar or registrant have been prevented and will be prevented during the pendency of the proceeding, and verifies the information requested by the UDRP provider. And we have a short comment, which I'll try to read. And FICPI supports the recommendation, which is considered another way to speed up the initial part of the process. Noted. No comments? Okay. Recommendation 5. If deemed compliant, the UDRP provider shall forward the complaint to the registrar and the respondent and notify them of the commencement of the administrative proceeding no later than 3 business days following the receipt of the fees paid by the complainant. See FICPI's comments on recommendation 3B. It is important to clarify what... Okay, that's just another business day issue. And I think that was that should be a noted then. A recommendation 6 and an FICPI comment that tersely says they support it. Yet another noted. The same for comment 15. And comment 16. We're on recommendation 8, comment 16. And I ask Marika to continue for the moment.
This is Marika. So recommendation 8 reads, this notification would also include information that any changes as a result of listing of proxy privacy services following the locking would need to be discussed, addressed by the UDRP panel directly. The working group recommends that this issue is further reviewed as part of the privacy proxy accreditation program. And there's a comment from FICPI. They say, it should be recalled here FICPI's previous statement that proxy privacy registrations are not as such an indication of bad faith registration and or use. It is a recognized fact that there may well be legally, politically, or personal reasons for not revealing to the public the full official and searchable WHOIS information. FICPI therefore supports further review of this issue, including the possible solution in cases where a need to keep information confidential has been demonstrated that the identity of the underlying registrant or true holder details are only made known to the registrar, to parties to the UDRP proceeding, as well as to the panelists.
Any comments other than noted? All right, we have recommendation 9, which is a long one, but FICPI supports it. And we have recommendation 10, and FICPI comments as they welcome the clarification. It is important to retain the ability to unlock a disputed domain during the UDP, presumably it's UDRP, proceedings in cases where parties agree to transfer. I guess that's a noted. And Marika, what are do we have next? We have a grayed out section, but it doesn't have a recommendation number in front of it.
No, this is Marika. So this is basically the section that we had in the initial report that outlines the two potential options for settlement, where we didn't agree on one approach or the other, but we said let's put both of those options in the report and actually encourage feedback so that as part of our discussions now, we can maybe settle either on one or the other, or if there's an alternative suggested, we could consider that as well. Do you want me to go through the comments?
I think you're going to have to continue. There's more words than I can get out in a string.
So this is Rick again. So basically, we have two options there, option A and B. In option A, the proposed process would be that, one, the parties ask for suspension, two, the parties settle, three, parties inform the provider, four, the provider issues an order to the registrar to change the whole details or delete the domain name, and five, that the change or deletion happens, and six, the complainant confirms change or deletion is complete, and seven, provider dismisses the case. And the option B approach was that, one, parties ask for suspension. Suspension request includes automatic dismissal when the suspension period is up. Two, provider issues order allowing registrar to unlock for the sole purpose of whatever the settlement is. Two, parties settle. Three, parties request the registrar to unlock, not to manage anything further, like terms, just unlock to allow transfer. And four, provider dismisses case automatically with no further action needed. If the settlement discussions break down, either party can request that the case be reinstated before automatic dismissal. I think if I recall correctly, I think option B basically follows the current process, and I think option A would be a slight change of current practice where it's actually the UDRP provider that would inform the registrar of what would need to happen with or what the outcome of the settlement would be. So the first comment in this regard is a comment from the ICA, who says that we prefer adoption of proposed option B as both providing more specific guidance on the procedures relating to the settlement and more specifically addressing the subject of the IR, a domain lock.
All right, so they're essentially supporting the status quo with more explicit instructions from us.
And this is Rick, I can then read the following one, which is cum laude. They basically say, we propose consideration of something along the following lines. At any stage of a UDRP proceeding, one, the parties jointly notify the provider and registrar of their wish for a 30-day suspension of the proceeding. Two, if the parties need additional time to negotiate a settlement, they may jointly request one 30-day extension. Three, if the parties are unable to agree on the settlements, the proceedings would recommence at their pre-suspension stage. Four, if the parties reach an agreement, they would jointly inform the provider and the registrar of the desired who is changes. The domain name would be unlocked and the proceeding dismissed without prejudice.
Any comments on that? I have one, but I'd prefer to hear from other people first. Christine.
I just want to throw out there that I don't necessarily agree or disagree, except the both the providers, I guess the providers already have rules in place around the suspension process. So, I mean, I'm assuming that what they're saying is this will supersede any rules that the providers have and basically unify and standardize the entire suspension process. That's just my, I guess it's just an observation.
Any other comments? I guess my comment is starting to specify time delays and time limits on the settlement process following a suspension is way out of our scope.
Well, Alan, that's really what the provider supplemental rules do.
You know, I understand, but us trying to impose them, I find a hard time connecting, adding a 30-day suspension where there's nothing, or a 30-day extension into the UDRP rules where there currently is no such detail. B, because of the locking issue, I find a long stretch.
Yeah, this definitely crosses the line from, I think this crosses the line on scope. I mean, even if we can disagree as to whether or not adding 4 days, I think, creating an entire new suspension process, yeah, I agree, is absolutely out of our scope.
Okay. Ty?
Sure. I just wanted to jump in there and go back to, obviously, the reason why we were first talking about suspension here in the first place is that, well, first off, we see quite a few of our cases settle out. You know, it's one where the parties come together and they work out a solution. Around 20% of those cases that we do see do settle out, and it would involve some procedure whereby the process would be halted and the parties would work out their problems, and then if they wish, terminate the proceedings thereafter. So it's just important to note that, the process of suspension is a long-standing one where the parties have both, you could say, come to an agreement between them and maybe the best solution between the two parties. And it's just that we want to ensure, when we're talking about locking of a domain name, that we also anticipate the unlocking for the purpose that many of the parties are utilizing in this regard. So to the extent that such is, crystallized within the UDRP process or outside as part of supplemental rules or just a process that parties will utilize, as far as that's concerned, I don't express so much of a preference, just the fact that this is regularized in a way that it provides further clarity to the parties and the registrar.
Thank you, Ty. Yes, I think it's important to go back on why we were here. We're here because the settlement process may require an unlock, and our job is to be very specific, telling registrars when they may unlock and not. So that's why we got into this territory. Going into the actual mechanics of the suspension, I already said I think it's going too far. Volker.
Yes, I have two issues with the comment by Komlauda. One is the one that we already mentioned with the setting of timelines for extensions. I think that should be part of the rules of the provider. That should not be discussed by us. It's outside of our rules. But I also think that in III, they are reversing the current practice of what happens when a suspension ends on its head. Currently, if the suspension ends and the complainant does not file for recommencement, then the complaint is dismissed. They want to propose that if no agreement is reached, there should be automatic recommencement at the time of the suspension ends. And I think that's one out of our scope and not the intention of the current process.
Luckily, the first part covers us. Thank you. Laurie?
Hi, it's Lori. I was just going to mention that if we allow a domain name to be unlocked prior to a dismissal so that the respondent has access to it, we run the risk of the name being transferred to another registrar before the case is actually settled. So in that, let's see, and I think it's option B, and maybe I'm not reading this correctly. Parties request the registrar to unlock, not to manage anything further, like terms, just unlock to allow a transfer. So, and then if somehow they don't come to a settlement, then the domain name is sitting there and is able to transfer. What do you do when it transfers to another registrar that, maybe doesn't follow the UDRP rules?
Yeah, I
or respond.
Thank you, Lori. We'll go to Ty in a moment. Perhaps a clarification from either Ty and or Christine. Since it's the unlock is predicated on the provider issuing the order, I'm assuming that the provider has grounds for not worrying about CyberFlight at that point. But we'll go to Ty.
Sure, this is Ty. I note that when we issue our order, we specify when it's requested that unlock is for the purposes only a transfer between the respondent to the complainant. And I know that when we were talking historically about this, when we were talking about what it means to lock a domain name, I know that certain registrars have different practices, including moving a domain name to a holding account even. So a lot of times it seems like that transfer has been a facilitated process by the registrar. And so what we just noted is that when we have the suspension, that process allows the domain name to be unlocked for the sole purpose of transfer between the two parties. And then we note that during the settlement and suspension, we don't take active part. We turn it over to the parties and the registrar, who's more in control of that technical process. So it's something that we haven't actually been a formal part of beyond just that notice that we would send out.
Right. This is Lori again. I agree with that, and that is the way we do it. We facilitate the change of account, actually. We don't allow the domain name. We technically don't unlock it. We wait until the parties have made their settlement. They notify us of that they both agree. We move the domain name to a new account where it remains locked until we receive a dismissal from the provider. And that way we ensure that the domain name stays where it's supposed to be until the entire case is completed.
All right, Volker, and we're just about out of time. We are out of time already. And Marika, do you have any comments on this before we close after Volker?
I just wanted to mention that we handle it quite similarly with small differences. We ask the complaint if they agree to transfer, then we ask them to open a new account with our retail platform. We push the domain name to that account, leave it locked so they cannot unlock it, and then we also open up. So it's very similar, just that the holding account already in the possession of the complainant, if that's what they agree to.
Thank you. And Marika, you had a comment in the back channel that perhaps you want to make now before we close. And I think we're going to have to go back to this one in the next meeting.
Yeah, this is Marika. Just to note, I think to the original comment, I think it was by Lori, that no unlocking until the settlement is reached. I think that is the proposed process for option B, because the number two actually says that the parties need to settle, and only if settlement is reached, the domain would be unlocked by the registrar. And maybe just one note as well on the suggestion that Matt has posted in the chat. I just would like to strongly recommend against providing the council with different options and having them discuss it further, because I think the council would basically just turn around and say, well, that's why we actually formed the working group, to give us recommendations, even if they have a different level of support or consensus, and at that stage they can consider what to do. But I think the working group, or the council, is looking to the working group to provide it with a set of recommendations and not necessarily ask the council to start debating these issues, where they may not have had the background and time that this group has spent on these issues.
Thank you, Marika. I tend to agree on that. I can visualize situations where a working group defers to council on things that are really major policy issues. I don't think this one qualifies. All right, we're a little bit over time. I thank you all for attending and for putting up with my coughing and lack of ability to speak, and we'll look forward to talking to you next week. Thank you all.
Thanks, everyone.
And Marika, do you want to try drafting something, or do you want me to do something first on whatever the option was I said we dropped something on? I think it was the extension period.
Yeah, I'm happy to write something up and get it to you.
Okay. Thank you, Marika.
All right.
And
bye.
I'll
bye-bye.
See some of you later this afternoon on the GNSO meeting. Or later in the day, whatever part of the day it is. Bye-bye.